This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we have a special guest with us, Mike Hambride. I'm actually really excited to hear Mike's story and what he's got going on here, but just a little bit about Mike. So Mike is a veteran real estate investing entrepreneur that has rehabbed and wholesaled over 400 plus houses and has built a rental portfolio consisting of single family properties and an ownership stake in over 100 million of multifamily investments. In addition to his extensive investment experience, he is the founder of FlipNerd.com and has produced over 1,500 video podcasts with millions of views and downloads. Mike has coached hundreds of real estate investors directly, thousands indirectly, and is sought after advisor to many Americans' top real estate investors through his Investor Fuel Real Estate Mastermind, a leading organization of over 150 of nation's leading investors. Additionally, Mike is the co-founder of Investor Machine, the most cutting-edge tech and data-driven lead generation system in America for professional real estate investors. Mike is a husband to Lindsay and a father to Jake. Mike, thanks again so much for joining us here today. I'd like to kind of start, why don't you give us a little bit of background more about yourself?
Yeah, and that was a mouthful, by the way.
I know.
You know, you guys are the same way probably when people say, well, what do you do? And you're like, I used to just say I'm a real estate investor, but now it's like, where do I start that response? Yeah, I'm a real estate investor, and that's evolved into a whole bunch of other things. Started investing in 2008, kind of refer to myself as a corporate refugee. So was in corporate America prior to that, and moved into real estate back in 2008 now, which is, gosh, I guess that's, what is that, almost 14,
yeah.
14
wow.
years
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. We're getting old and you start to like, you know, sounds like these like old yarns you're spinning like back in 14 years ago. But yeah, it started with flipping houses, which I did for quite some time. And then it evolved into, I do a lot more multifamily stuff now and have some service businesses as well, as you kind of mentioned back there. But we were talking, Joni, ahead of time, well, you start a plumbing company, it just kind of made sense. And I think we all get that creep of like, well, you know, if you squint your left eye, it makes sense that I start a business like this as well.
Exactly.
So it started with one thing and it's evolved into something much bigger.
That's awesome. Serial entrepreneurs.
Yeah. I call myself an entrepreneur anymore, I think, just because it's too hard to describe it. But and that seems to be a buzzword now, mm-hmm. entrepreneur. But the I mean, you got an extensive background and we have so many mutual friends and we're part of a mastermind together. I think that's why we met you originally and know your partner, some of your partners, really well and on some of your businesses. So we just thought it'd be a great opportunity to have you and just, you know, share your insights and wisdom with our listeners and some of the stuff you're doing. And then also I think, you know, some of our listeners, you know, definitely there's an opportunity for them to engage in some of your masterminds and, investor, fuel, and then, your technology company and all that you have with Jason. I think it's phenomenal what you guys have done and have grown. So just, you know, as an entrepreneur, since you do multiple things, what big takeaways have you learned since, you know, getting out of corporate America and jumping into the entrepreneurial world? Is there anything that you had done differently or some big takeaways that you have had or learned?
Yeah, I don't know how long you have. you know, one of the things that I think a lot about and I talk a lot about is the difference between kind of being self-employed and being a business owner, right? And I'm sure there'll be a lot of people that are watching the show that resonate with that. And I kind of refer to Robert Kiyosaki's cash flow quadrant, which is like you're either an employee or you're self-employed on the left, or you're a business owner, or you're an independent investor. You don't even have to lift a finger and your money kind of works for you, right? Mm-hmm. I think we all want to be in that box,
right?
And where we don't want to necessarily be is an employee. I mean, we all need employees, not that there's anything wrong with that, but us that are entrepreneurial minded, like we have a bigger vision, right, than that typically. And again, not taking anything away from anybody, the world needs employees as well. There's plenty of people that have worked for me that don't want to live the lifestyle that I want or mm-hmm. have the ups and downs that we have, right? Correct. But I think if somebody thinks they're entrepreneurial or they're they want to be a business owner, a lot of times they get stuck in that self-employed box, mm-hmm. which I kind of define as if you stop working, the business stops too. So you can't do the things that many of us got into business for in the first place, which is kind of the freedoms of being able to take vacations or spend time with family or whatever we might want to do with our time. Because if you're the main person and you're doing the thing, then you can't go on vacation or the money stops. Or I mean, if you do, the money stops. God forbid someone in your family gets sick or has a problem, like the business can't survive without you doing the thing. And so I think there's a lot of people. And by the way, the people that are listening to that are in that box, the most important thing is just recognize it. Like some people may say, here's where I am. I love what I do. I don't want any employees. I just want to do everything. And there's nothing wrong with that as long as you recognize it. If you think you're on this path of freedom and you don't have a team and a business with systems and processes behind it, then you can never retire. You can never really leave without the business having a lot of disruption, right? So those are some of my main learnings, because for years and years, while I had a couple of employees, I was in such important roles in the business that I couldn't really pull out without the business being sacrificed.
And as you've grown in and built those teams, have you taking those next steps, and I'm sure you've learned a lot as well. Is there anything you would share about building teams, or because I think that's a whole nother next chapter, right? Or evolution as an entrepreneur like learning how to manage people once you take those steps.
Yeah, and right now recruit them even. That's like so hard to find good people, right? I would say, it's interesting because I'm not the best manager. I'm really not. I have some big teams, and honestly, I just try to bring somebody in that can manage them for the most part, because I'm just not, I'm not the most patient person, I'll say, in terms of that. But I will say this, like I think the important step is to think about your business in a way to where you can scale it to where you can afford that overhead, right?
I mean,
that's a lot of additional expenses in your business. And so I think that there's a lot of people, and again, not taking anything away from anybody, that are in real estate, for example, that might flip a couple houses here and there and make a lot more money than they did in a W-2 job, right? But in order to have an admin, let's say, or an office manager of some sort, and a salesperson that's kind of running your leads and things like that, you know, you're going to layer in a fair bit of overhead. So you have to, so a couple deals here and there isn't going to work. You need to do probably 3 deals a month, right?
Right.
You have to start thinking about this case for scale, which isn't, as an entrepreneur, these greedy entrepreneurs wanting to make more money. It's like needing to make more money to actually run a business and not just have a job.
Yeah.
It's hard. I've noticed that some people, they don't see it that way. You know, they see that we're just trying to make more money for ourselves, but it's like the amount of money and expenses that sometimes goes into just running the business, and just keeping it in the black. Sometimes people just don't realize what it really truly takes and to grow. But
no doubt.
I wanted to get into, one of your companies, the mastermind that you run. And cause I think, that's where we met. It was in one of your masterminds. And so, a mutual mastermind that we were part of for years. It's always valuable to us. And we think, Joni and I are huge.
Mentorship and masterminds. Yeah,
and we just think it's a great component and we're always trying to elevate ourselves and get into other masterminds just to our knowledge and keep learning. What are you, I guess, can you tell us like what your mastermind offers and some of the big takeaways
and the importance of being in a mastermind, right?
Yeah. I think, for us as entrepreneurs, obviously a lot of our stuff is in the real estate space, but in any kind of business, it's a bit of a lonely world, right? You're kind of on an island doing your thing. And as you start to do well at your thing, the challenge is it's hard to connect with even some of your friends and family, right? Mm-hmm. That are outside of the business. They just don't get the sacrifices,
right?
Or, if you have a great deal or a great quarter or a great year, you can't, it's hard to go to your neighbor and say, hey, we netted over 6 figures last month or something like that. It's just, it's weird, right? And you would never say that. It's not about bragging, but when you're talking with your friends or your peers, you can have these conversations that you just can't have at the basketball game with your kids' friends' parents or whatever, right? It's like, because it's like foreign to a lot of people. And so you can't like talk about the good times, and it's hard to commiserate about the bad times. And it's really hard to, I mean, those, not that you can't have relationships outside of the entrepreneurial space, but it's just very different when you can talk to people that kind of get you, that understand the struggles that you've gone through. They understand that there's times when you've lost money and maybe almost lost everything, and being able to have those conversations, right? And those are lessons for us. And the importance of having those conversations is, I mean, I always say I have lots of arrow wounds in my back from like trying things that didn't work out, but it's even better to learn from like your friends that have kind of blazed that trail before you.
Oh, absolutely.
To try to, you know, to not have to go down that path yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the benefits of a mastermind or a community, is to be able to, climb the learning curve faster because other people are telling you where the pitfalls are. Right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. And I mean, I think all three of us have probably spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on masterminds and learning, but you think about, you know, the cost of, you know, what we trying to figure it out on our own would have probably been mm-hmm. way more or double that.
And so, we, even at the level that we're at today, we, all of us, I'm sure, still, you know, are involved in some sort of a mastermind.
Correct. No doubt. I this year I joined a mastermind that's outside of real estate completely. Pretty expensive one in the grand scheme of things. And it was just to get a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you operate a business at a decent level, it really takes somebody saying one insightful thing to pay for that thing for like a year, right? It's just some little nugget that they weren't even trying to like teach on. And you just heard something like, wait, what did you just say? And it's like, wow, that's worth more of the cost of admission just from that one little nugget, right? And that's what we're looking for at masterminds or even in coaching at a high level. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't need to absorb an entire textbook. I don't need to absorb everything. I'm just looking for a couple nuggets here that I can actually implement in the business that'll really move the needle. And the truth is when you're in high level groups, they're everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can you explain, just say we have a listener that doesn't even know what a mastermind is. Can you maybe some of the fundamental things you guys do within your mastermind?
Yeah, so that word gets used a lot these days, right? I mean, it's on free Facebook groups and entry-level coaching programs and stuff like that. So that word is probably kind of a buzzword that a lot of people use. I kind of define it as a peer-to-peer network, kind of a professional association of people. It might be industry or niche specific, like mine is, we have actually a two group, single family and then multifamily. And so it could be specific like real estate, or it could be about marketing or online marketing, or there's lots of other, you know, industries that this probably exists in almost every industry. Right. But, I kind of view it as like peer to peer. So I've done a ton of coaching where I coach people on how to get started or coach people on how to scale, but that's like me teaching everything and I'm the teacher and they're the students. And so I would kind of call that more coaching. In a mastermind, you know, I facilitate the meetings. And in fact, I even have people that are on my team now that help facilitate the meetings, but it's very much connecting people. So you hear somebody has a challenge and you're like, hey, you need to talk to that person today, or can you guys sit together at lunch today? And kind of connecting people that are peers, that are this network of people that are all helping each other. And so that's kind of what I refer more to as a mastermind, is a peer-to-peer network more so than kind of coaching, if you will.
Awesome. You were just talking about connecting. That's something I've noticed about you, Mike, is that you're great at connecting with people, nurturing those relationships. Does that come natural to you, or is that something that you work on and focus on?
I guess it's probably more natural than the average person. I mean, that's kind of why I started Investor Fuel. I have this other story that's slightly longer that starts back in high school when I was had a fake ID and I was buying kegs. And literally selling cups at parties to pull people together. And so I kind of say that's where my networking
entrepreneurship.
Nice. I love it.
Yeah. I probably didn't make money doing that. But honestly, the truth is, you know, because all my friends are like, hey, do I really need to pay? And the next thing you know, I'm giving out a bunch of cups, right? The truth is those were some of the best times of my life. Like, I shouldn't have done that. I hope my son never listens to this and thinks that's acceptable. But for me, it was just the joy of bringing people together, right?
Yeah.
That's always been part of kind of my fabric. But you know, it is something that takes work. And the truth is I've given a bunch of presentations before on networking. And I kind of talk about how a lot of people think that networking is, you know, going to a RIA club or an event and filling your pocket full of business cards. And I kind of basically say that's really just the beginning of it. Like, it needs to be a two-way relationship and communication that kind of happens on an ongoing basis. And so we have to work at it. I mean, I have a team of people now that make sure that people are getting taken care of and connected with what they need. It's not just simply having a big Rolodex, if you will, that I know makes me sound old, but having a contact list that's like full of contacts or huge lists, that's not really networking. That's just a list.
Yeah. That's awesome. I know we're friends on social and I get to see you travel and doing fun things together with your family. You know, can you, how do you approach the work-life, you know, balance and family balance? And, cause I see, you love to spend time with your wife and your kid, your son.
And how do you shut that off going home? You know, after you're like us, you have a ton of stuff going on.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, as we're talking here, literally in the past 5 minutes, I just saw my wife walk out. So we work together too.
Nice.
She's more behind the scenes but she's effectively our CFO. Mm. She's done a lot of operational stuff. She's way more detail oriented than me. And so she's been an important part of that for sure. For 14 years, literally every business I've ever done. I mean, I'm the front man and she's kind of behind the scenes cleaning up my messes.
Hey, but there's always one, right? That's what makes us a dynamite team.
Yeah. You know, I think what's happened over the years, and this took a while because I think I fought for probably 5, 6, 7 years on trying to have this divide of this is my work and this is my personal life. And it's all just one big ball now. Like I try to just tie it all together. And if you see, like, in fact, I just booked a trip yesterday for members of my Investor Fuel Mastermind. Like travel is something that's important to me. So I've just, anytime I have this, you know, something that I care about in my life, I just try to work it into the business because it all just is one ball for me. And so, for example, I just got back like 2 weeks ago. We did a trip to Vegas with, I think it was about, I don't know, 20 people or so from my mastermind that went out to Vegas, and we went out in the desert and just like shot sniper rifles and
oh, cool.
Rode dune buggies and did a bunch of fun stuff like that. A little bit later this fall, last year we had about 30 people that went to Cabo. So I think it'll be 30 plus this year. And I just booked a trip yesterday to go snowmobiling and dog sledding in Yellowstone. Nice. right after New Year's. And so travel has always been something that's really important for my wife and my son and I, like we love to do that. And so now I just integrate it in. I'm like, I want to go do something. And I have my primary family and then I have my second family, uh-huh. which is my Investor Fuel Mastermind. And I don't charge for it. I mean, as long as they're my mastermind, I just invite my friends to come. And like the Yellowstone one is family friendly. People will bring their kids. And so I've just kind of made it a part of what I want to do in life. And it used to be, we had these kind of side trips and I'll invite some people to come to where it's now. It's like, this is what my family wants to go do. And you guys are invited to come with us.
That's awesome though.
Yeah.
That's cool. I've never, that's not the answer I was expecting. And so I think it's a good answer.
Hey, that's great.
You've had so many years of, helping and mentoring, people within real estate and building your own companies. Can you like share your insight, maybe it's even, you can incorporate Investor Machine, but how, like say somebody's just getting started in real estate, what advice would you give them? How do they get started? Where should they start? And maybe it might be using a service like Investor Machine to really help you get off the ground, but.
Yeah. So for Investor Machine, we really work with professional investors more so than newbies, but that actually came out of, coaching so many newer people that they always ask, like, what's the best list to mail to? How should I generate leads? Mm-hmm. Like those are always critical questions on the lead gen side. You know, I would take it back to what I talked about initially, which is treating it like a business. Cause I think a lot of folks, especially if they have a job and they're trying to get started,
right,
you kind of have a safety net, right? And the problem is that's not a bad thing. And I wouldn't advise people like, hey, go burn the boats and quit your job. But I can tell you the most successful people that I've ever coached did exactly that. They just went all in. And the thing is, I'm not telling people to go burn the boats and jump into real estate. I've always had a really hard time telling people to do that. But if you have this safety net to where I try to do something and it doesn't work out, I still get my regular paycheck, then it's so easy to just say, I'm just going to stick with this, right? Mm-hmm. It's because, you know, I think as entrepreneurs, and you guys will probably identify with this, without a tremendous amount of failures behind you, you wouldn't be where you are today. Like, you had to fail, right?
Right.
To the point to where you're not afraid of failing now. You know, those are lessons that are stepping stones on the way to something bigger than that. And I think until you've sat in like the entrepreneur's like shoes, you don't really understand that. So you fail and we pull back. A lot of people pull back because they're like, oh, that doesn't work. And it's like, no, that you have to go through, you have to go through those lessons to learn that, that will make you stronger as an entrepreneur. And I think that that is, you know, so back to your question on what would I advise somebody when they're getting started? Mm-hmm. It's to try to really understand that like failure is not a bad thing. It's only a bad thing if you fail and you quit, right? Mm-hmm. If you fail and you move forward, that's what makes you stronger. And so just expect a bunch of failures up front and be okay with that. And so I would also say, you know, really hire a coach or a mentor that has done this before, because back to what I said with the mastermind, they'll help you climb that learning curve way faster than you Absolutely. Will on your own, because you'll be able to dodge a whole bunch of pitfalls that are inevitable. But you can learn some of those lessons through somebody else's experiences.
Yeah. At least the mastermind or the coach probably can guide you to where you don't wipe yourself out, you know, and completely hurt yourself. But the, but yes, I think we've all made more mistakes than I care to count, but continue to make them still to this day. But
the takeaway I got from that, when you just said, you know, treat it as a job, because you're right, we can relate to that. When we got started, we were 19 years old. We didn't have a job. This was our full-time thing. And so we didn't have a choice, right? So we had to make it work.
Yeah. I've always struggled in advising newbies too, or people just getting started, because it's like, you know, we started young, I didn't have kids, I could afford to, you know, totally bomb and I guess, and luckily we didn't, but I mean, it, you know, I guess I could afford to take a lot more risk than if I had a family and obligations, and you know, there's obviously but there's people that go all in and totally crash, and then they are able to learn from that and rebound. So
yeah.
You know, I guess there's both sides to that, but what about growing a larger company? Cause I know you've, like you said, you know, I guess Investor Machine mainly caters to them, and you've also mentored and seen some large real estate investment companies and built one yourself. So tell me,
like, what does it take to scale a large
company? Yeah. And is bigger better? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's the question I always ask.
So for sure, bigger is not always better. You know, there's a balance there. One of the things that I think a lot of people, the message that doesn't get told very often is that it's okay to be smaller if it aligns with your goals. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people that, you know, I've had people that, I don't do new investor coaching anymore, but I did it for a long time. And there's people that I would start talking to, and I would, in the initial process of getting started with them, I would find out, well, what are your goals? And, you know, can you give me an idea of what you make now? Like, mm-hmm. what's your annual, if they have a job, what's your kind of annual compensation? And a common, you know, scenario might be, well, they make $80,000 a year now, but their goal in real estate investing is to make, you know, $500,000 in their first year. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, your first goal should be to offset your income, right?
Yeah.
And so sometimes what happens is when people, and I'm all for setting big goals, but a lot of times people set goals that are so big that at the first sign of them maybe not hitting that, they just quit. Right. Yeah. And it's like, well, wouldn't success be that you've replaced your income and you don't have to do that anymore if you don't like that? And so, and I think social media exacerbates that, right? You see all the positive side of a business, or certainly real estate investing, or people showing pictures of checks. And truthfully, I haven't gotten a check in like 7 years. Like, why wouldn't you just wire that? The reason from my perspective to get a check is to be able to take a picture of it and share it on social media.
Correct.
But I think that, you know, you only hear part of the truth, and probably a very small part of the truth on social media. And so, you know, I think it's important for people that really want to do this to not tie success to some bar that they set from watching people on social media, to get around somebody that really can take time to understand your goals and help you chart a path to get there. Cause it's effectively just a recipe, right? If you were going to make like Thanksgiving dinner, you do it very different for four people than you do for 40 people, right? And there's different recipes and different amounts of ingredients, I guess you put in.
Yeah.
I'm making this up as I go along here. But for the most part, it's the same for people that have a goal, whether they're in real estate or anything else. Like, this is your goal. What are the steps you need to take to get there? And I think a lot of kind of coaching programs that are out there, or certainly social media, tells you that there's only one goal, and that's to be the best and biggest at everything and drive a Lambo and, you know, travel 365 days a year. And, you know, nobody does that happily. Mm-hmm. And so it's to basically be realistic about what your goals are, what it is you really want to accomplish. You can have a long-term goal, but what is your like year one goal, and what would need to happen to get there? How many deals do you have to do? What's your exit strategy going to be? How many leads do you need to get that many deals? And just literally kind of back into it. I mean, it's ultimately just math.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I know you said you were making up as you go, but it was actually a good analogy, because I think it's
most people miss all that. They miss the steps to, you know, what is it going to take to get to your goal? They miss all that.
Yeah. And what you know, I think a lot of times your problems or your holes or your crutches, whatever you want to say, at a smaller size business, if you just blow it up and try to go bigger, those problems or holes still are there. They just get bigger. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of people, that's how they go broke, but they, because those holes just end up eating them or consuming.
No doubt.
Yeah, especially when
you asked about building a bigger business, you know, I think one of the things that has evolved for me is, in my first couple of businesses, which were really, you know, flipping hundreds of houses here in Dallas, wholesaling and rehabbing all that, and building a rental portfolio here, was just my wife and I. It was all us. So I didn't really think much about partnerships or JVs or any of those things. Everything that I've done kind of since then has been with and through other people. And that really opened up this huge world to being able to grow something way larger than just what I could do on my own. Mm-hmm. And it's by aligning with people that have a skill set that I don't have. I mean, for the same reason that I was a pretty good coach when I was coaching new investors, they came to me because I had a skill set that they needed. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think you guys know Corey Peterson. Mm-hmm. He's my partner on our multifamily deals. Corey was that guy for me. He's the expert in the space where I'm not. And we've been able to grow a meaningful relationship here. And with Investor Machine, you know, Jason Lewis, my business partner there, has a skill set that I didn't have. Mm-hmm. And I think I did that he didn't have, right? And so we complement each other to where we can make one in one something way greater than two.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that that's for the most part the recipe for growing a bigger business. Because mm-hmm. I'm not great at everything. Very few people are great at everything. Like, there's one thing that I'm not one thing, but there's certainly a couple things that I'm way better at than other things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So what's your next? We always ask our listeners, what's next for you in the next 5 years or 10 years?
Now that you're talking about goals.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is, for those that have known me for a long time, like I was probably a scatterbrain, like I'm trying a bunch of stuff or doing all kinds of things. And now I really just innovate inside of what I already have. And I've kind of, part of it is, for me, I'm an idea guy. I'm a visionary that's like coming up with ideas. And instead of doing something totally new now, I just say, what can I do, for example, inside of Investor Fuel that's innovative and allows me to just not lose focus over something that is great and I love to do and works really well. And so, for example, bolting on multifamily to that, because I'm doing more multifamily, was an obvious fit, and that'll allow us to, you know, grow that quite a bit.
Right.
And so I really am just focused purely on Investor Fuel, my mastermind, and Investor Machine, which is our data company or lead gen company, and trying to innovate inside of those circles instead of, you know, going out and starting something totally different.
That's cool. Well, any current books you're reading that you would recommend?
Yeah, I just finished up Who Not How, which you guys have probably read or heard about before. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a great book. And it's kind of, you know, a lot of the stuff we talked about today was about that, about finding somebody that can do the work, you know, for you, so you don't have to figure it out. I think a lot of entrepreneurs are like, let me figure out how to do it, and then I'll hand it off to somebody else. And we spin our wheels for years trying to figure out how to do something. When you find, you guys know this, when you find the right person to do a role in your company, and they're like 10 times better than you, it's like, oh my God, why didn't I hire this person 2 years ago?
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So that's, it's been a great book.
That's great.
That's cool.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Anything, how can our listeners get involved with you?
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate that opportunity. You know, if you're interested in our mastermind, Investor Fuel, we really work with professional investors, and we have a couple different groups based on the size of your business. And we have a multifamily group as well. So you could just go to investorfuel.com to learn more. And Investor Machine is our data and lead gen company, which is kind of a done for you service that we do some pretty deep analysis on data, unlike really anything else on the market, and then provide kind of a done for you service, which mainly includes direct mail and skip tracing for single family investors. And that is theinvestormachine.com if folks want to learn more. And then, as you mentioned up front, I started my podcast. My initial podcast was 8.5 years ago. At the time, there were like 6 real estate podcasts back when I started. And some of these will be some common friends, like guys like Sean Terry, Joe McCall, Jason Hartman had a few podcasts at that time, and a few others that I'm sure you guys know well. And now there's a ton of them, which is great. But that was all through flipnerd.com, and we have probably over 1,500 video podcasts on there now, and still plugging away at that too. So that was my original site.
Awesome.
We'll also have this all in the show notes as well, so our listeners can get access to that pretty quickly.
Yeah. So, well, thank you for taking this time. I think it was huge. I think it was very valuable, and we got to know you better, which is even more important. So, thank you for doing this. Yeah. So.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike.
So, if you enjoyed this, please share it and please like it. You know, we depend on your ratings, and we depend on our listeners to keep sharing the show. So, thanks again, Mike, and we'll see everybody next week.
See ya.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there. Talking. But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolf'sDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.